The five-star guys are less likely to crash and burn than the guys in the next group. That's just been proven historically, you know, time and time again, which I think Brett's point is a good point. You know, typically if a guy does crash and burn, it's the guy who's only done it for like a year.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 44 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with you, as always, with me, as always, is, and with you, Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. Mike is living in the land of the lost internet. Mike, how goes it?
It goes fine, although I was saying before the show, I feel like it's 1997 or something. I just got a notification from Verizon that there's a problem in the area and it's not going to be fixed till 5 a.m. Like, I'm used to, you know, internet goes down maybe for like 10 minutes. You know, Hurricane Sandy, when it hit, I think like at the end of 2012, the internet didn't go down, and it's down tonight. And, you know, I know we always talk about the weather. It's cold, but otherwise it's fine here.
Yeah, it's I don't know about Verizon, Mike.
I don't know either. I also feel like you call in more often than I think anybody else has ever.
Yeah, although I think it's only my third, maybe fourth time calling in out of 44 shows, though.
I think we've had like only three guests too, though. So your ratio is strong.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, that's, in that case, that's true. But yeah, that just might mean we need more guests.
Well, that we may remedy that soon. We had a couple guests earlier this off season. I think we are planning to have some more as we move forward. But it's just the three of us for this evening. Today we are going to talk a lot about starting pitching. We've been going through our positional series at BP, and as you've seen from articles this week, if you've been checking out our content, we are at the arms. So we are going to go back to the regular format. Last week we had our little before and after labor episode, which was fun, and now we're back to business. So let's get the pleasantries out of the way. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And Mao is at MRubio52. You can reach us as a podcast collectively at flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. And we ask that you rate and review us on iTunes and the Stitcher Radio app, because then more people find us, and the more people that find us, the more better we feel. So that's that. We are going to kick off this episode instead of with a random topic. We are going to answer a couple of reader emails, a couple of quick hit reader emails, and then we'll jump right into starting pitching. The first email that we have is from, the first email that we have is from David, and he has a couple of questions about labor. Actually, both questions are about labor. One's in general, one's about a player on our team. David asks these three questions, and we'll answer them sort of in order. We won't read all three of them at the same time. First one, how do you feel about Jose Abreu going two spots before Giancarlo Stanton? I am going to throw this one out to Mike. What was your I know where we had Stanton ranked. What was your reaction when you saw us?
I wasn't too surprised. I've seen Abreu going as high as four in some mocks, and I've seen some experts who are high on him. You know, I don't think high enough to break into the top three, but I've seen him going four, so I wouldn't take Abreu. You know, at that point, I prefer Stanton, but I wouldn't be surprised. I think some people really like him. I don't want to speak for you, Brett. I think I'm probably slightly lower on him than some others. I'm not as low on him as, say, Ray Flowers of SiriusXM is, but that's kind of where I stand on him. So I wasn't surprised. I thought that was not a shock. You know, just something that has happened in a few drafts.
Yeah, I've seen it happen in a couple of drafts. I think it's personally, I think it's getting a little cute, but to an extent, I mean, Abreu was fantastic last year and could very well be fantastic this year. And Stanton, you know, has the risk since he didn't come back from the injury at the end of last season. I mean, you could talk yourself into it, but I wouldn't do that. I mean, I have Stanton about three or four spots higher than Abreu, I think, in my rankings. But you know, they should both be hands down first round talents. So it's not like you're arguing between Stanton and, you know, Jason Wirth or anyone.
Yeah, I think this just has the potential to look wrong instead of stupid. So,
so let's go with the second question. Second question is Anthony? What was that?
No, I was just getting some echo there. We're good.
Oh, never mind. Is Anthony Rizzo going this early? Is Anthony Rizzo going this early saying more about Rizzo or more about the players behind him? Mal, what are your thoughts on that?
It's the cheap way to go, but I think it's a little bit of both. I think a lot of people are kind of buying into the average. You know, he did hit 280, and that's plenty valuable, especially in the current offensive climate. I don't necessarily buy 280 as an average for Rizzo. I still think he settles into that 260 to 270 range. But there's also, you know, there's some fall off going on with the offensive options once you start getting beyond where Rizzo was starting to get taken. So, I personally think it's a little bit of a mixture of both. I believe in the power plenty. And I think there's a lot of power potential there. But, you know, I think people are probably buying the average a little bit too aggressively.
Mike?
I think a lot of it has to do with Rizzo. I think that people really are high on him and believe he can be a first-round first baseman. And again, to the point about Abreu, I've seen some people taking Rizzo ahead of Paul Goldschmidt, which I think is a little bit crazy, but it's been happening. So, yeah, it just kind of speaks to the fact that I think he's a young player. He had a big season last year. I think people think he's going to take another step forward, whereas my bet is he's going to be just as good as he was last year, and it's kind of hard to bet past that, primarily for the reasons Mal cited.
Yeah, there's just, with him going in the top 10 picks, which I've seen, there's so little room for profit there, or even break even. It's not a proposition that I'd feel comfortable making, but I agree that it's definitely a reflection on Rizzo, since there are you know, legitimately good players going, you know, in the 5 to 10 spots behind him, you know, for the most part. Number three here. Is taking Mike Trout with the first pick of your draft like taking a huge hit from a bong, being handed a bag of chips, and then being asked to do something? No matter how you perform on the task, you feel great, so you end up making some wacky choices in your task. do either of you guys know what he's talking about here?
Well, I'm a paper person, so no.
Is that a question? It just seems like a statement.
It's a funny statement.
All I can really say to that is Jeff Erickson, who of RotoWire, who took Trout, he had a fine draft, so I don't think there was any lingering after effect of taking Trout in, you know, terms that are equal to taking a bong hit. Although I don't even know if that's what the question is. Maybe the purpose of the question is to make me feel like I took a bong hit, and here we are.
Well, do you feel like you took a bong hit?
No.
Oh. It's unfortunate.
Very unfortunate. So thank you, David, for writing in. We got one more question. This is about a player on our team. This is from Brady. Says, listening to the Outfield podcast, disappointed you didn't chat about Justin Upton. So with that in mind, could you talk about Upton's upside, how the power transfers to Petco? He isn't, in parentheses, he isn't as much of a fly ball guy as I thought, but I'm still worried a bit. And what are the chances he finishes top 10 in an OBP league? Says, by the way, if you want an answer to Cano's power dip, look at his ground ball percentage. Thanks, guys. don't know about that last sentence. I guess that was that something we talked about, maybe?
Yeah, we talked about Cano a little bit, I think. I don't know if it's second baseman or labor, but we did talk about him.
Yeah. So let's talk about Justin Upton, because I don't think we really mentioned him much on the Outfield podcast or really on the labor podcast, and he was probably, we were talking about this before the shows. Mike, he's the guy who we seem to get asked about the most. So why don't you talk about where your level of comfort is on Upton, both in general and where we got him in the draft, and what sort of your realistic expectations are for 2015.
Well, I think, and I remember this because I've been asked about Upton actually at a bunch of other places, whether it's podcasts or radio spots that I've appeared on. So Upton was 29th overall, I think, in your rankings, Brett. He was 38th in mine. So on average, I think we had him somewhere in the mid-30s and maybe a little bit higher because when you do those aggregate averages, you know, sometimes guys are close to move up a little bit. So when he went 45th, which is where that end of the third round pick was, I kind of looked at him and I thought, you know what, like he's just a bargain there. And I think some of it was for the upside guys that we talked about, like George Springer and Carlos Gonzalez, who we thought might slip, were taken earlier than we expected. And, you know, as some people have said to me when we talked about Upton, you know, I think I talked about this to Glenn Colton on Twitter. I have talked about this to Rob Silver on his show. They all said the same thing, which is like, yeah, you know, Upton's probably going to slip a little bit in Petco, which is my feeling as well. But there's really nothing wrong, you know, with Upton. I think to get to Brady's question a little bit, I think the power and the numbers will slip a little bit. You know, some have talked about his numbers at Petco in his career good, but I think that's similar to kind of the batter pitcher matchups, where you're taking a bunch of small sample over a long period of time, so it's kind of worthless. As far as the top 10 in OBP, like I just don't see it. I had Upton in Tout Wars last year. The OBP adjustment goes up a little bit for Upton, but we're not talking about like Joey Votto or a top OBP player where there's going to be a big spike.
Yeah, that pretty much hit it on the head.
Good job, Mike.
Yeah, we're just going to be repeating if we try to chime in at this point. So we'll let that one sit. We'll put that one on the
shelf.
Yeah,
Brady, if you want to hear Brett or Matt talk about that, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you Mike ruined it for everybody.
He did.
All right. So again, if you want to have your questions answered on this podcast, flagflyforeverbaseballperspectives.com. You know how email works. So with that, we are going to move on to starting pitching. There are a lot of arms to discuss, so we are going to just jump straight in. Let's talk about the most obvious question here at the beginning of the list, and that is we've covered this a little bit from time to time, but I just wanted to check in and make sure. Make sure kind of stances haven't really changed all that much and really talk about it specifically. Clayton Kershaw, he's the only guy that I think all three of us have the only pitcher who all three of us have a first round grade on. Mike, what is the highest spot in the first round that you could see taking him at?
Maybe sixth. I think that, Trout's a no-brainer. I don't think anybody serious has suggested taking Kershaw number one. Then Kutch, this is in no particular order, but probably Kutch, Goldschmidt. I just don't really see Stanton. I think the other guy you could argue, I guess, I guess maybe you could go 5 on him. But 6 for me is kind of where my comfort level is with Kershaw. I think it's a balance between the respect for him versus how good pitching overall is. I just don't see the need to reach really high on him, like, say, 2 or 3 overall when there's so much good pitching out there.
Yeah, you're one spot ahead of me. I'm at 7 with him. I can't see a scenario where I would take him higher than 7th. Not because I don't think he's that valuable, but just because it fits into my strategy and my comfort level.
I should point out the 6-7 would probably depend on Miggy's injury. I think if it comes out, you know, that Miggy's healthy, then Kershaw drops to 7 for me as well.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Matt, what about you?
No, I'm in the 7. I'm also in the 6-7 spot. So a lot of it depends on Miggy's injury, like Mike said. It's just, you know, we've touched on this in previous episodes. We touched on this last year. When a lot of the Kershaw stuff was going down, and the separation factor between him and the other pitchers isn't to the point where you take him in the top 5. So, you know, he's just on the outside looking in for me.
All right. So let's move down to some of these other names on the 5-star list. I think we know the answer to this because we talked about it for labor. But Mike, who's your number 2 pitcher behind Clayton Kershaw this year?
Well, for me, that's Max Scherzer, and I know Brett. When we combined our lists, you didn't disagree, but I think there's definitely going to be a strikeout bump coming with him facing mostly pitchers as opposed to mostly facing DHs. He moves, you know, into a division that I think is pretty favorable for him in terms of who he's facing. And best of all, he doesn't have to face the Nationals. So he really gets a bump there. I think he's not going to strike out 300 because nobody outside of possibly a healthy Yu Darvish or a healthy Kershaw could do that. But if he strikes out 270, that wouldn't surprise me at all. So I think that Scherzer is a pretty clear number 2 for me overall in both NL and mixed.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. I mean, I think he's pretty close to Felix, but I think you're right. I think the move is a significant factor, and I think he really runs up the strikeout totals this year. Let's kind of go into the next grouping of the rest of the 5-star guys. Really, we'll group everyone together. Who's the guy in, just sort of not taking into account the, you know, the elbow issue that Greinke's had this preseason? Just because let's assume for this exercise that turns into nothing. Who's the guy in this 5-star tier that you're most concerned about from a downside perspective, Mal?
Most concerned about from a downside perspective, I think, is, I think I'm going to go with, I hate going with this guy because I really love him, but I think I'm going to go ahead and take the cheap duck, and I'm going to go with Chris Sale, just because, you know, some of the injuries that he sustained last year are kind of concerning. And while I don't necessarily think that the mechanics issues are going to 100% guarantee an injury, they're still pretty scary. And, you know, if he's throwing 150 innings, it's not as good as if he's, you know, scraping close to 200. So, you know, really kind of taking Greinke out of that equation for what's happened so far this year. I think Sale's probably going to be that guy just because the where he is right now and where he can fall in terms of production is pretty far. Still love him, though, my guy.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, it's a tough group because, you know, obviously they're all 5-star guys for a reason, but probably either I'm going to go with Johnny Cueto. You know, great season last year. It's probably more of he belongs in this tier, but toward the bottom of it, if you pay him or draft him for last year, I think you're going to regret it a little bit. He has had in previous years some endurance or health issues. So that's really the only question. He's actually put up a sub-3 ERA, you know, for a number of years in a row now. So it's just a question of, are you going to get all those innings from him again, or is he only going to put up, say, 170, 160? If you invest here and he does that, you know, yeah, I get the replacement concept, but I think that hurts you a little bit. So I'm going to go Cueto.
Yeah, Cueto was going to be the guy I was going to throw out. Just because I think he's both a candidate to miss time and a candidate to step back in strikeouts. But I guess for the sake of not choosing a repeat guy, I'm going to go with Corey Kluber here. Not that I don't think his 2014 was a legitimate and strong step forward. I just think the track record that he has is nowhere near the track record that these other pitchers have. And, you know, we've seen guys who have come up and had maybe not years quite as good as Kluber had in 2014, but guys who have had really, really strong years and then just failed to put it together for multiple seasons for whatever reason. He's probably not a guy that I'm going to end up with in many leagues this year, just because I still have some of that lingering doubt in the back of my head. But you know, all things considered, I mean, he's still a 5-star guy. He's still, you know, pretty safe. It's you're comparing among the safest of pitchers that we have in the game.
Yeah, we all kind of reached out for that one, huh?
Well, it's tough. I mean, it's a really good group, and I think we all make, you know, there's all really good points here, you know, to knock these guys, but there's a reason they're 5-star. I talk about this over and over again. For the most part, the 5-star guys are less likely to crash and burn than the guys in the next group. That's just been proven historically, you know, time and time again, which I think Brett's point is a good point. You know, typically if a guy does crash and burn, it's the guy who's only done it for like a year.
So let's now go to the 4-star tier. There's certainly, I mean, the 5-star tier was star-studded. The 4-star tier is only slightly less star-studded at this point, as it's led off by a trio of guys who I don't think anyone would really have batted an eye at if they were 5-stars in Cole Hamels, Adam Wainwright, and Jordan Zimmermann. Let's start with let's talk about all three of those guys. What's holding Cole Hamels back from being a 5-star pitcher? Is it really just as simple as the win potential on a you know, seemingly terrible Phillies team?
It's the Phillies. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think when you're talking about 5-star, you know, 5-star potential guys, you're talking about guys who are going to be able to help you out in all the categories that they can help you out in. So, you know, for starting pitchers, it's wins, and for relievers, it's saves. And I think when, you know, we're talking about Cole Hamels, he's certainly a fine pitcher. And I mean, I would be tempted to nudge him up into the 5-star, but I can certainly understand restricting him down to the 4-star because, you know, at this point, he's really only a plus in 3 categories fantasy-wise. So, I mean, I get it.
Mike, what about you?
Pretty much the same. I think you could, you know, he had the injury last year. It was minor, and then that plays a little bit of a factor. But it's mostly the wins and mostly uncertainty. Yeah, and somebody asked me about this actually. Like, you know, if Hamels got traded tomorrow to San Diego, would you move him up? And you know, I most certainly would. I think at that point, I probably would move him in the 5-star between Cueto and Darvish. And if I were keeping a cap on, you know, what we were doing, you know, with the tier in the terms of the number of pitchers, I'd probably move Lesser down into the 4-star.
Makes sense. So same question, but probably slightly more obvious answer. Adam Wainwright, it's the elbow at this point, right? That's standing in the way of him being a 5-star guy. I assume that is the absolute answer there.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, what else, you know, really could it be? And we've talked about this. I think we might disagree a little bit on how high he'd be ranked, but, you know, I think, Brett, you said top three. I've said top five. If he's completely healthy, he's a no-brainer five-star. He's done it and, you know, done it almost as well as anyone outside of Kershaw in the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I'm absurdly high on a healthy Adam Wainwright, and obviously this isn't a healthy Adam Wainwright, but you know, I still think there's plenty here. But I agree with bumping him down just for safety. But I love Adam Wainwright. That's no secret. So those two are easier. This next one's the harder one. Jordan Zimmermann is a guy who gets overlooked a lot. What is holding Jordan Zimmermann back from taking that step into five-star category, Mike?
Very little. You know, he's a guy probably of these three guys that, you know, despite the order, I really looked at and considered and wanted to move up. And in the end, some of it, you know, we kind of talked about this on staff as we were putting these ranks together. You can only have so many guys in the five-star. Like, now, all these guys, if you decide that Hamels and Wainwright and Zimmermann all belong up there, it suddenly becomes a really crowded pool. I honestly think you could make a case, depending on how you feel about him, let's say for NL only, of putting him ahead of, you know, any of Cueto, Greinke, or Lester, and I wouldn't really blink. So some of it is just that. It's just the size of a tier. And for me, it's a matter of you got to kind of draw the line somewhere. And Zimmermann's just sort of where I've drawn the line, in part because, you know, of the guys we mentioned before, and this is even true of Hamels and Wainwright, he hasn't quite broken into that, like, top earnings tier. And only he's always been kind of a low 20s guy as opposed to a mid or high 20s guy.
Yeah, Zimmermann's a fascinating guy, especially for me. You know, he was one of those dudes I played a lot of close attention to back when he was a prospect, and, you know, he kept kind of getting hurt and changed up his approach. You know, for a while there, the strikeouts were pretty absent. They showed up this year, you know, in 2014 in a pretty big way. And I mean, you know, just judging off of what he did in 2014 and all the peripherals and the pedigree that accompany the player, I would slot him, you know, right behind David Price as well. I mean, I probably would make the case that he's a five-tier guy for me. I do understand the logic and holding him back into the four-star tier because, you know, you do have to, you know, there needs to be some exclusivity with the five-star tier. But, you know, for me, this is a guy who's right there for me.
Yeah, I mean, that strikeout rate jump that we saw in 2014 is exactly what we were waiting to see. Zimmermann, you know, since he had Tommy John surgery, he's never posted a strikeout percentage over 20, and it was 22.8 last year, which is, you know, even more of a sizable increase from the 18.6% in 2013, and, you know, it's his swinging strike rate went way up. It was actually, I believe, last year was the first year he had an above average swinging strike rate in his career. He's never been that huge of a swing and miss guy, but he's getting more in that direction, and his control is just fantastic. And it's it's all pointing in the direction of a guy who is, who I think with the requisite innings, and I think that's the big thing with Zimmermann. Honestly, I think that's what's holding him back, is that Zimmermann's pitched over 200 innings once, and he's not the kind of guy who is going to give you, you know, but the sub-2 ERA. He's not going to give you, a 0.9 whip. He's not going to strike out 250 batters. He could win a lot of games, but that's not something you want to bet on. When you have a guy like Zimmermann who's going to be really, really good, but not super elite, in any individual category, you really need those 220, 225 innings from him in order to really make those ratios count. And there's, you know, there's a difference between a guy who goes out and throws 220, 225 and a guy who throws 199 and two thirds like he did last year. So if he gets those, if he gets those extra 25 innings, I mean, that's it. He's a no doubt five star guy for me going forward. And, you know, I think he'll do that. I think he's got the body for it. I think he's got the makeup for it. And I'm really curious to see what happens this year with him.
Yeah, if he gets over the 200 innings, this is going to be bold. But he's right up there with Kershaw in terms of best pitcher in the NL.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets overlooked, but he's quite excellent.
He is.
Yeah. So let's hit on some of the more, I guess, exciting guys in this tier. Let's start with the sort of pairing of Julio Teheran and Gerrit Cole. Both guys are, you know, former top 10 prospects. Both guys are projected to do pretty strong things this year. And I guess which one do you guys feel better about at the moment? Start with Mike.
Well, I probably, you know, maybe it's a bit of a bias because we took him in labor, but I think I like Cole a little bit better. I'm kind of breaking one of my own rules here, which is Teheran has broken the $20 barrier earnings 2 years in a row, and Cole hasn't done it yet, so this is more of a potential pick. But I'm kind of going with the potential with Cole. I'm going with the park. I'm going with the fact that the Pirates have a better team. You know, the Braves are admittedly retooling this year, and a lot of Teheran's value has been tied up in those wins. And I think I like Teheran more than you do, Brett, but I'm still going to make the endorsement of Cole here as being the guy that I think you're going to be a little bit better off with in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And I did, again, like we're picking nits at this point. I mean, when you're talking about Teheran and, you know, just everything that he brings to the table, he's a very good pitcher. But I just think that the upside's it's better with Gerrit Cole. And, you know, he's one of those guys where if everything starts breaking right, like it's a pretty aggressive high mover. So, you know, I'll go with Cole over Teheran.
All right. I'm with you guys on that. So let's spare everyone talk of the other guys that we took on our labor team, because we talked about them last week. I think we hinted at this in a much earlier episode, but I want to at least hit on 2015 Matt Harvey and sort of what this means. If I set the over under on 174 and two thirds innings for Harvey in 2015, would you guys take the over or the under?
Oof. I'm gonna take the under. I think it's gonna be probably closer to 170, even though I think 174 is a really good number to set it at. I just think they're going to be pretty conservative with his innings, and you know, if it's going bad by the time the All-Star break rolls around, which is, you know, a very high possibility with the Mets, I think they're going to treat him with, you know, all sorts of kid gloves.
I'll take the under as well, but I that is a good number to set it at. I think it's going to be really close in either direction. But already, you know, the Mets' plan, it sounds like, is to start him in their seventh game of the season. And if you look at the calendar early on with the off days, you know, a lot of people talk about the Mets using a six-man rotation, you know, possibly Rafael Montero. There was some talk even of Noah Syndergaard, if he was ready and looked good, of using him in a six-man rotation. Realistically, they don't even have to do that. They could just pretty much use their off days and kind of, you know, use him conservatively in the early going. That just makes me think we're going to see an under. I think even the Mets do well, and I'm more optimistic than now is about their chances this year. They're just going to be really careful with him in the first half.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. Is there anyone else you guys want to touch on in the four star tier, or is there more to talk about? Is there more to talk about Harvey?
No, you know, I mean, I think, you know, I think Samarja is a pretty Samarja and Shields are pretty interesting ranks to me. I guess the question that I would have to you guys is, you know, you got which one of these guys are you riding into 2015 with? Are you taking Shields or are you taking Samarja?
I would take James Shields. I think that. I think you can't really go wrong with either of them, but you know, Shields' repertoire and game is just perfect for that park. It's, you know, it's a very, very natural fit, and you know, Samarja is for better or worse going to be pitching in U.S. Cellular. He's you know, in the American League. It's when in doubt, go National League always.
Yeah, I like Shields too, and you know, I agree with everything Brett said. I'd add to it, you know, we kind of have these questions often about a guy like Corey Kluber, who Brett mentioned earlier, but I see some of the same things with Sharks numbers at the tongue twister, in that he had that great year, and it's just 1 year. I think there's probably a little bit of regression coming. I get that he's a really skilled pitcher, but I'm not necessarily sold that he's as good as he was last year. You know, as Brett pointed out, some of it's the park, especially after he moved to Oakland.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. All right, so let's go into the very hefty three-star range. I don't even know where to start with this group. There are so many guys here. But let's each kind of pick one guy to single out as sort of an interesting discussion point, as far as current year value goes. And let's start with Mal.
Oof! Wow. Okay. So Andrew Cashner is a very interesting case. Like, I think we all like what he can bring to the table in terms of stuff and ability. The question with him, as it has been throughout his entire career, is health. And, you know, this is a guy that you guys had in last year's labor team, and this is a guy who was making you pretty happy until he made you very sad. So my question to you guys is, how much do you believe in Cashner, you know, being healthy this year? How many innings do you think he's going to provide? And, you know, is there any reason to maybe bump him up over this list, you know, put him a little bit more in the Gio Gonzalez, Tyson Ross category?
Projecting innings out of Cashner is not the kind of bet that I want to make. The thing about him though is that if he is healthy, he's not a three-star guy. I think the three-star ranking is a little bit of a hedge. If he's healthy, I think he's a four-star guy. If he's not, he's, you know, one or a two-star guy. You know, we know how much talent he has. The Padres are going to be a better team, so we should have a little bit more win potential. But he's got to bump up the strikeouts a little bit. Those numbers have been a little bit more disappointing than I think everyone thinks. I mean, he's struck out less than 7 batters per 9 each of the last 2 seasons. And while he's certainly capable of much more than that, he hasn't showed it lately. So, you know, the talent is there for a 4-star guy. I just, I'm not comfortable enough with the risks to put him any higher than he is on this list.
I don't have much to add to that. I was going to bring up the strikeouts, and I don't want to say Cash is overrated. And yeah, I was all over him everywhere last year, but he's just a guy that I think. We're expecting the strikeouts, but nothing has really shown us, not even some of the expected strikeout numbers, that he can do it again. And the other thing about that is, if that's the case, if he's not going to strike out a ton of guys, I think that's what people are reaching for. They're looking at that really fast fastball and thinking he's going to be a strikeout king, but I wouldn't pay for that. I think Brett's right. I think a 4-star he could certainly break into. some people are looking at him like a potential five-star. I think that's where you get into trouble with Cashner.
Agreed. Mike, who's someone who interests you on this group?
Drew Smiley. I think that he's probably being priced appropriately, but I was really fascinated by, you know, what he did after the trade and after the trade for David Price with the Tigers. The ERA was terrific, but even if you look at the, you know, the FIP and some of the other peripherals, he was still really, really good. And the Rays, you know, I think this is going to continue even, you know, with Andrew Friedman and Joe Maddon, you know, out the door. They just seem to have a way with certain pitchers. And I think Smiley's one of those guys. And, you know, they also brought in Rene Rivera, who, you know, if you believe BP's framing numbers, they're not going to miss much by losing Jose Molina. I think Smiley's a guy who really could kind of sneak up on people the way Alex Cobb did the last couple of years and provide a lot more value than, you know, currently where he's being taken, either ADP or auction dollars.
Yeah, the only question I have with him, and it's not even much of a question, is, you know, whether or not the new Rays defense is going to be able to keep up with the old Rays defense did. So, you know, how much are they going to miss Ben Sobrist? You know, where are the benefits going to come from? But, yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, what he did in Tampa Bay was a function of a couple of different things. I think, like you said, Mike, they do a couple of things very well, you know, specifically with those types of pitchers, pitchers with Smiley's profile. And I also think that, you know, he's going from one of the worst defenses in the American League to one of the best. And that's going to count for a lot, especially in the margins. And I just think that, you know, he's one of those guys who's going to benefit a lot from both the park and the defensive work that's going on behind him.
Yeah, I mean, it should be reasonably strong. I mean, he's a fly ball guy who, you know, being a fly ball guy going to Tampa is always a pretty positive thing, since Tropicana is a nice home run suppressing park. But I mean, Smiley is certainly has the potential to do some really fun things in 2015, you know, there are a lot of people who are going to be paying for what he did down the stretch with Tampa. And, you know, that 1.70 ERA looks nice and shiny, but he's pretty legitimate. He's not a, you know, I don't think he's in, you know, in SP1 or an SP2 by any means, but I think he's a really, really solid, you know, third, fourth starter for even shallow league teams. The guy I want to talk about is Michael Wacha. Wacha sort of gets he's sort of falling victim to not really being experienced or have a strong enough track record to be given the benefit of the doubt for last year, but he's being overshadowed by younger names with either similar or greater upside. So I mean, all the, you know, there are lots of guys who have been all the rage this offseason, you know, one of them being Marcus Stroman. There are others, even Drew Smiley's in that group. But, you know, Wacha is a guy who was valued extremely highly last year, going into drafts last year. And, you know, while he did miss a good chunk of the season, he came back at the very end in the playoffs, and, you know, it was an interesting way to come back. But he looks to be healthy coming into this year, and his performance was really strong when he was on the field last year. So I think there's a little bit of a discount on Wacha this year if you think he's healthy. And as of right now, I think there's no great reason to think he's not going to be healthy, at least compared to some of the other arms around him. So I, you know, as much as I thought he was slightly overrated last year, I think he's moved, he moved and swung the other way this year, and be curious to see if his ADP starts going up as the spring goes along, because he's one of those guys that I think may very well have that happen to. There's still a ton of guys left. Is there anyone else you guys want to talk about in this tier before we move down?
There's really nobody who jumps out at me. I mean, you know, there's certainly a lot of guys here, but there's no one who jumps out.
There's nobody who, yeah, really. I mean, there's people that I like. But nobody that's I feel compelled to talk about, unless you want to hear Jose Quintana thoughts, which I don't think you do.
Nah, I'd like to stay awake. Oh, Jose Quintana. So boring and pretty good.
Yeah, he's Anyway.
All right, so let's move into the two-star tier, and you get some very guys that could have huge swings in performance this year. You got your young guys, you got your old guys, you got your out of nowhere guys. It's a hodgepodge of various talent levels as it usually is. But let's start with the quote unquote not super talented guys. We have Matt Shoemaker and Michael Fiers in this range here, in the top part of the two-star tier. How seriously should we take either one of them or both of them, Mike, for 2015?
Well, I think Shoemaker kind of falls into the he is what he is. You know, he was kind of a triple A, I don't want to say lifer, but, you know, just a guy that had stuck there, not much of a prospect. A lot of what kind of is going to make Shoemaker valuable is what was there last year, which is the park. And I think the shift from the PCL, you know, in perpetuity to Anaheim really, you know, can't be underestimated. And, you know, also the defense. And, you know, some of that defensive advantage with him is just the fact that, you know, he's kind of a split ground ball, fly ball guy, and he's got some pretty good guys back there behind him in Trout and Calhoun. So I don't think he's going to do what he did last year. But I do think that the idea that he's just going to, you know, merely slip and get worse is kind of, or a lot worse, I should say, is kind of a misnomer. You know, as far as Fiers goes, I think I like him a lot more than, you know, just about anyone else I've seen. I know the upside with him is a three. He's not an ace, and the upside there might even be generous. But you know, I think a lot of what we saw with him last year is certainly repeatable. And I think that's a mistake people often make. They look at a small sample and they say, "Well, the guy can't do it again." But in his case, you have to kind of look at why he did it. And, you know, the Brewers made some adjustments. They kind of went in there and fixed what was ailing him in the past. You want to be careful with that. You don't want to simply extrapolate last year. But I think his ranking in this tier is most certainly appropriate.
Yeah. Fiers is a guy who's just, he's so fascinating just because he was so good in 2012 for that 100 inning stretch or so, and then was so bad in 2013, and then so good again in 2014. It, you know, you get these swings with guys who don't have elite stuff, and not even, I mean, you could put, most people would say that Fiers barely has average stuff. But guys who are extreme flyball pitchers in parks that help hitters hit home runs, and you'll get skewy performance there because, you know, home runs fluctuate. You get I mean, this is exactly what you would expect. In 2012, Fiers gave up 0.85 home runs per nine innings. In 2013, he gave up 3.22 home runs per nine innings, and then 0.88 home runs per nine in 2014. I still find it incredibly hard to believe that he'd be able to keep that number under one for any significant stretch of time in Milwaukee, but you know, Fiers generally is not the kind of guy who I'm going to bet heavily on, just because I look at it and it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. But yeah, I mean, you know, he's go ahead, Ma.
Sorry, yeah, guys like Fiers, you know, they find a way to survive, not necessarily thrive, right? So, you know, this is a guy who had to learn a cutter just to, you know, even survive in the minor leagues. And, you know, he came up, he did a good job, and then got kind of figured out and saw a little velocity bump. And, you know, if he holds that, it's, you know, it's all fine and dandy, but, you know, eventually major league hitters figure out velocity. So, you know, I'm not exactly predicting disaster for him next year, but, you know, there's going to be some fluctuation with the numbers, and I don't think he's the type of guy that you really want to ride your fantasy season, you know, expecting great things out of. You know, this is more of a survivor than a thriver, I think.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say about him is, you know, the one thing about all those home run numbers is, you know, the one that really looks like the outlier is the 3.22 or whatever, you know, you said it was, Brett. So I would agree, you know, I think the home run rate is, it should track a little bit higher or a little bit over one. But I think a lot of times people look at that small sample from 2013 and kind of are just going the other way and completely discounting him. You know, in this tier, I think what I'm kind of looking for from a guy is maybe a 3.4, a 3.5, and I don't think that's unrealistic.
No, I think I'm certainly not saying to discount him. I think he's the kind of guy who you could see have a sort of a high ERA and pretty low WHIP. One of those kind of disproportionate ratio guys. I could see, even in a pretty good season, I could see his ERA being somewhere between 3.75 and 4, but with a really strong WHIP. I mean, his WHIP last year was 0.88. He doesn't walk very many guys, and when he gives up fly balls, they're probably going to be outs or home runs. So I could see him sort of in that, you know, 1.10 WHIP range, even with a near 4 ERA. So, you know, while that certainly diminishes his overall value, it sort of gives him a little bit of a governor to an extent, unless it just all completely falls apart. Which, no, I don't think anyone thinks it's all going to completely fall apart, given what he's been able to do in two separate seasons. But there are going to be people reaching on him, and it's going to be he's going to be one of those guys who's going to be super fascinating to watch. Speaking of guys who are going to be super fascinating to watch, Justin Verlander is sitting in this two-star tier, and the reports from spring training, not that you would expect them to be any different, are glowingly positive. So at what point, here's the question, at what point do we start seriously considering bumping up Justin Verlander based on what we may or may not see during spring training?
If he's out there and that curveball looks like it did back in 2002, then I think you start thinking about bumping him up. And I'm not talking about bumping him up to 5-star, but I'm thinking, you know, bumping him up to like maybe the 3-star tier, you know, just somewhere in that range. Because the thing of it is that, like, you know, we're already starting to hear, and you alluded to this, like, we're already starting to hear the stories. It's like 20 pounds of muscle that he put on, and, you know, the curveballs, you know, it's better than it's ever been in his life, and, you know, best shape of his life, this, that, and the other thing. Now, I like Justin Verlander, and I really hope he does put it together, because when he's on, he's fun. And maybe he finds another pitch, or maybe, you know, that curveball is as good as everybody's saying that it is. But unless you see it and it's just an absolute son of a bitch, like, I think you kind of have to rein it in and let him kind of go out there and do his work. Because, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's going to be an overly positive story with Justin Verlander if he's, you know, just because people want to believe. And I'm in that group. I want to believe. But I'll believe it when I see it.
You know, for me, what I'm going to be looking at more than the curveball is that fastball velocity. You know, his velocity, you know, over, even just go back to 2012, it's dropped 2 miles an hour since that time. That's what he needs. I mean, we see this with pitchers who lose velocity all the time. There's some guys who adjust and can kind of figure it out. You know, Felix Hernandez has been one of those guys. Historically, Pedro Martinez, you know, after the first time he got hurt, even the second time to a degree, was one of those guys. Verlander has not fallen into that camp. He's lost the velocity, and he just really doesn't, you know, hasn't known how to handle it. Can he become that guy whose velocity doesn't come back, figures it out? yes, but I don't really want to make that bet. So to me, the question is, I want to see him for like a couple weeks in spring training, and it's spring training, but you know, if he's hitting like 95, 96 on the fast gun or 94 on the slow gun, then you think, yeah, you know what, this might be the Verlander. The problem with that is it's very possible that even when the games start, that he's not going to be throwing it, you know, his hardest or his regular season best. So you're going to kind of be making a guess. I think if you really like Verlander and you think it's legitimate, push him to the top of that three-star tier. I wouldn't even go four-star. I think somebody's going to reach for Verlander, and I might not own him as a result. But this goes back to what we're talking about Kershaw. Like, there's so much great pitching. I don't feel the need to really go crazy and reach on Verlander. And you know what? If I'm wrong and he's a Cy Young candidate, I'm wrong. I think you can kind of close your eyes in the three-star tier and guess and kind of find a guy like that anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just going to say. I'd say I that sounds exactly right to me. And that three-star tier is exactly that. They're all guys that have that are solid, and I don't think it would completely shock anyone if any of those guys in the three-star tier ended up being Cy Young contenders. That's just how pitching works. I mean, there are guys in the two-star tier that it wouldn't be a huge shock if they were Cy Young contenders. We see this year after year. Speaking of guys who were once top pitchers and looking to make a comeback.
Same question
about Justin Verlander, but let's go a little bit further east. Is there anything you guys could see out of CC Sabathia this spring that would make you comfortable taking him as sort of a later round flyer in mixed leagues?
Well, he's like the exact opposite of Verlander at this point, right? We got Fat CC back.
He's clocking in at three bills, huh?
We got a little hoss bag out there in the mat. I don't know. I'm hands off on CC at this point, man. Because it's just been I've been burned by that guy in a negative way, extremely negative way. When I finally, you know, took the bait and took him. So I guess the thing that you want to look for is that he's just. I don't even know. Like I'm way out on CC, I guess is what I'm saying.
I would take him maybe toward the tail end of a 15 team mixed as a flyer.
Yeah.
In a 12 team, I might use a reserve spot. In particular, the DL rules are liberal and fairly unlimited. Yeah. Otherwise, I just at this point. So much mileage on that arm, and it just doesn't, you know, I know, you know, there's all this talk about, you know, Sid Fernandez and David Wells and all the anecdotal information about guys with weight. CC turns 35 this year. I don't want to say he's done. I really enjoy watching him pitch, and, you know, he's a lot of fun, but, you know, I kind of look at some of the projections for him, and, you know, what you're really looking at is an ERA in the high threes is probably the best case for CC. I don't even know if you're going to get that though. It just seems to me to reach any further than the end of the, you know, end of the draft and a 15 team mix is probably a waste of a pick.
Yeah, I mean, we had him towards the top of our queue in the early reserve rounds in labor, and he ended up going before we got a chance to seriously think about him. But yeah, that seems right. I don't want to completely give up on Sabathia just because he is a lot of fun to watch, and he was so good for so long, but yeah, I don't have any great confidence that there's much I can see there that would make me feel comfortable bumping him up any higher.
I don't want to get my hopes up, man.
No, I don't think anybody does. So let's move on to everyone's favorite game. There's like a billion players in this one star group, so it should be this should be the easiest week for us, even easier than outfield. So let's go through it. Let's play Who's Your Guy. Mike, you're up first this week. Who's your guy?
Oh man, there are like a gazillion names here. So boy. You know what? I'm gonna go with somebody with a little more upside as opposed to, you know, a veteran bouncing back, and I'm gonna go with Andrew Haney. You know, we've talked about this before. I think a lot of people have written him off after those five or six awful starts for Florida. I think some of the same things that apply to a guy like Shoemaker apply to Haney, except I think Haney's more talented. You know, good park, a good defense, you know, pretty good coaching staff there. And even if he's not, you know, other people have said this too, you know, even if he's not an ace or a two like some suggested, if he's a three in that park, that could play up to being like a, you know, even like a 2B or a soft two. And that to me is something that could very well propel him past this tier. Now, obviously, there's some risk. You know, he's challenging for a rotation spot. So if you're having your draft soon or your auction soon, you don't want to go too crazy on this. But I think, he's appropriate for this tier, and he's not a bad flyer at all.
All right, Mal.
I'm probably going to go in a slightly surprising direction here. I'm going to go with Old Man Fastball. I'm going to go with Jake Peavy. Now, here's the thing. There's quite a few caveats, as per usual in my one star guys, but you know, he's a guy who's, you know, he does well the first couple times through the order. And this is going back to his time with the Sox, and you know, Hawk Harrelson was pretty big on this. But you know, times three plus, it's just, it doesn't work out so well. So I think what you're getting out of PB is probably about 170 innings of solid baseball, and I think that's something that the Giants are probably going to hold him to. They're pretty smart about their starting pitching, and I think they have the bullpen that's going to be able to navigate the extra innings that they're going to have to eat during a PB start. And I think that they're going to put him in a positive place, and you know, he's going to be able to be successful. You know, in San Francisco for a couple of different factors. You know, the park is pretty solid for him. And, you know, they're pretty smart with their pitching. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Peavy.
Sounds good. So I'm torn on my guy, so I'm going to cheat and talk about two different guys. But I'm going to do each of them quickly. The big upside guy that I want to talk about here is Carlos Martinez. Martinez is pretty risky even for this tier, just because we don't even know if he's going to win the fifth starter job. It's still possible that they either go with my former and still current band crush Jaime Garcia, if he's proven he's healthy, or maybe a stopgap until he's healthy if they decide they want to leave Martinez in the bullpen. But the stuff that comes out of his arm is just disgusting. And if he does figure out how to properly channel that, he could put up some pretty strong numbers. Though I certainly wouldn't take him any higher than this one star group because of the risk. The other guy who I want to touch on is the very, very last name on this list, and that's Wade Miley. He's someone who, honestly, I'm a little surprised is not getting a little bit more love this year. I mean, obviously, he's on the Red Sox now. The transition from National League to American League is a little bit rough, but he, you know, is a guy who took a pretty strong step forward in strikeout rate last year, even though it came at the expense of his ERA. He struck out more than eight batters per nine. I don't think he keeps all of that, but I don't think he gives all of it back. And he's thrown 200 innings each of the last 2 years. That Red Sox offense is going to be something to behold, I think, in 2015, and could put him in line to win a lot of games. So while he certainly carries a lot of ratio risk, he's a guy who keeps the ball on the ground pretty well, and I really think could return some pretty nice value from where he's going at the moment. He's certainly not a guy who, even if he's at his best, I don't think he's much more than a two-star guy. Maybe he sneaks into the three-star tier if he really holds those gains and is somewhat lucky on the ratio side. But he's someone who I don't think should be going as late as he's going in drafts now. So with that, that brings starting pitching week to a close. So we got one more week of this. We are going to do relievers next week, no matter how everyone feels about it. Yes, I know. So such is life. You guys will survive. So we are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back and close things up. Welcome back, and thank you for listening to episode 44 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I have been Brett Sayer, and you have additionally been listening to Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. You can email us as a podcast, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. If you have any questions, we will start covering them more on the show in the future, as we have done the past couple of episodes. If you go to baseballprospectus.com, you will catch the tail end of our positional series. We are in the midst of starting pitching right now, as you can gather by the podcast. But we have a week of relievers before we get really into our standard content. So sign up today for premium membership. You get access to all of our good stuff, all of our prospect content, and all of our strong regular content. And if you sign up for a super premium membership, you get all that plus access to the Bat Signal, which is our fantasy answering service. You guys love it. We love it. Everyone loves it. It's a big party. Other than that, we will catch you guys next week for episode 45. Yes, everyone will be out with the flu because it is reliever week. So with that, have a good week. See you next week.
You know who else is going to be out with the flu? Jaime Garcia.